So we are recording. Okay. So this week's discussion is going to be about the mitzvah of Toichacha. So literally, we translate Toichacha to be rebuke. So that comes across harsh and strong. We could translate the word Toichacha to be instruction. The word Toichacha also means to show and to instruct. So we can take this to be, when are we required and what's the proper way to instruct, and when is it better to just let it be left unsaid. So the pasuk is a pasuk in Kedoshim Vayikra, Perik Yud Tes, Pasuk Yud Zayin. The pasuk says, the famous pasuk, Sisna esachicha bovavecha, don't hate your friend in your heart. You should surely rebuke or instruct your friend, your kinsman. Don't bear a sin over him, regarding him. So Rashi says, and this is probably the most simple translation, the way we're used to hearing, that you shall surely rebuke your friend. If you see your friend doing something wrong, there's a mitzvah to instruct him the right way. However, leisisa alav chet, don't embarrass him. Don't embarrass him publicly, not even privately. That's how Rashi translates the pasuk. Now, the Ramban has a beautiful translation, explains these psukim beautifully. At first, he explains the pasuk is discussing the mitzvah of instruction, to give instruction if you see someone doing something improper. We have to feel responsible and try to instruct. And then he explains the pasuk based on guidance. I would call it guidance in interpersonal relationships. It's a fascinating Ramban. So the pasuk says, don't hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke him, and don't bear a sin over him. So the Ramban says like this. Let's read the Ramban together. I quoted the Ramban. The Omar, the pasuk says, you shall surely rebuke your friend, which means, and this is the simple translation, to teach him the right way. If someone is going in the improper path, if someone is doing something wrong, we have a mitzvah to instruct him, the proper path. The pasuk continues, don't bear a sin. So again, Rashi says it meant don't embarrass him. The Ramban says, that if someone else is doing something wrong and it's within our power to correct him, so we shoulder some of the responsibility of that wrongdoing, because we could have corrected it. If we would have instructed the person in the proper way, we could have made a difference. And therefore, we bear some of that.
Okay.
Everybody, please mute yourself.
Swipe all the way out.
Hi, Dov. How are you? Okay. So now, that's what the Ramban says. So that's how the Ramban translates the verse, that we shall surely rebuke and don't bear a sin. What does not bearing a sin mean? It means that if we're able to instruct someone else and make a difference in someone else's life, in order to put the person on the proper path, if we neglect to do so, we bear part of the responsibility of whatever is not going right. Now, the Ramban says, "Hanochon be'enai," but the Ramban says it's also proper in my eyes to translate the verse like this. It's not referring to rebuking someone for having done something wrong halachically. The pasuk is talking about interpersonal relationships. When the pasuk says you shall reprimand, just like when Avraham, he reprimanded Avimelech regarding the wells. Every time Avraham dug a well, so Avimelech's servants, they went and they threw mud, they stuffed up the wells. So Avraham, he rebuked Avimelech, he challenged Avimelech about that. But Yomer HaKasav, the pasuk is saying like this, don't hate your friend in your heart. What does that mean? If your friend ever does something that doesn't go your way, he ever wrongs you, if your friend wrongs you, don't hate him in your heart. So in modern expression, don't bottle it up. Don't bottle it up. Don't hate him in your heart. But rather you should be open with him and you should reprimand him. You should challenge him. You should confront him. Madua kocha asisa imadi. Don't bottle it up. Question him. Confront him. Why did you do this and this to me? Don't bear a sin. What does that mean? Don't bottle it up. Don't cover up the sinner. Don't gloss it over. And not to reveal it to him. Right? So we sometimes feel that if somebody wrongs us, the way we should respond is by not responding at all. And we should just cover it up and gloss it over. Now, that could be true if we're big enough to totally put that on the side and not even feel any grudge whatsoever. But if we know ourselves that we're going to resent it, I'm going to constantly be questioning, it's going to be churning, it's going to get embroiled in my mind, why did so-and-so do such and such a thing to me? So says the Ramban, now my mitzvah is not to bottle it up. Don't hate your friend in your heart. Don't bottle it up. Rather, which means you should confront him. And you should say to him, why did you do such and such? Because when you confront him, he'll either excuse himself to you. In other words, he'll justify what he did. And who knows? Maybe he was right. Maybe he didn't wrong you at all in the first place. Maybe it was a misunderstanding. Or if indeed I'm right and he's wrong, maybe he'll confess. Maybe he'll apologize. And I'll be able to atone for him. In other words, we can make up. So the Ramban is telling us a beautiful message here when it comes to human relationships. If someone ever wrongs you, so right now I'm faced with a choice. I can either look the other way. If it doesn't bother me at all, that's one thing. But if I see that it bothers me, I can either bottle it up, and all that's going to do is it's just going to become like a pressure cooker. It's just going to create a barrier in the relationship. Says the Ramban, the mitzvah is not to hate him in your heart. The mitzvah is to confront him, and that will give him that will challenge him. That will give him now the option of either excusing himself and explaining why what he did was a misunderstanding, or he'll actually apologize to you, and then you'll be able to move forward, and then you'll be able to become friends again. That's what the Ramban says. So I summed it up that it's an amazing Ramban. But you also see from here that there's a mitzvah to teach your friend to echachas musar, and will be punished if we don't do that, right? So again, if you see me doing something wrong, if I see you doing something wrong, and we're able to correct it, we're able to instruct, we're able to, rebuke is a harsh word, but we're able to instruct and to show the person the proper path. If we neglect to do so, then we bear some of the responsibility of whatever's going wrong. So now, that's what the Ramban says. Now, the Gemara Masechet Shabbos on Daf Nun Hei Amud Aleph, it's very appropriate for the eve of Shiva Asir V'Tammuz. It talks about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And we for those that are learning the Daf Yomi, we recently had, I believe it was Friday's Daf, the Gemara said, L'charva Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim was destroyed. One of the reasons Yerushalayim was destroyed was on account of the fact that people saw wrongdoing and nobody stood up, nobody tried to correct the wrongdoing. So that was one of the reasons why Yerushalayim was destroyed. So it's very apropos for the eve of Shiva Asur B'Tammuz. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos on Daf Nun Hei Amud Aleph. It's an amazing Gemara. Omer le Rab Zeira le Rab Simoin. Rab Zeira said to Rab Simoin, Lo chichinu mar lahani debei reish galusa. You have to rebuke, you have to reprimand, you have to instruct the members of the household of the reish galusa. Now the reish galusa was the head of the exile. If you look in the translations, they translated the exiliar. He was actually a descendant from the Davidic dynasty. He was given some level of autonomy, some level of authority to rule by the Roman government. And he was actually the head of the Jews. He was the Reish Galusa. And the Gemara says sometimes the Reish Galusa was righteous. And sometimes the Reish Galusa, whoever had this position of of power was corrupted and his family acted corruptly. So there were different times and different points in history. Reb Zera said to Reb Simon, you have to reprimand the members of the household of the Reish Galusa, of the Exiliarch. They were this noble family, this family that held themselves to be above the law. You have to reprimand them. Now, it doesn't say what they were doing wrong. Maybe they weren't shechting properly. Maybe they were saying Lashon Hara. Maybe they weren't dressing tzniyastik. Maybe they were abusing people. It doesn't say what they were doing wrong. But you have to be mechiyach them. So Omar Leis, Rab Simon, he tried to abdicate. He said, Loi mekabli minoi. They're not going to listen to me anyway. Omar Lei, so Rab Zera was encouraging Rab Simon, Afo gavle mekabli, even if they're not going to listen, even if you think they're not going to listen, Loi chichinu mar, you should still reprimand them. Why? The Omar Abacha Brabi Chanina, and this is a very powerful statement, Me oilam lo yotza mida toiva mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'chazar balara. Hashem never promised something good and took it back. Never happened. Once Hashem promises something good, he never takes it back. With the exception, with the exception of this, with the exception of the righteous bearing responsibility for not trying to fix what's wrong in their generation. The Pasuk says in Yechezkel, Hashem said to the Malach Gavriel, to the angel of Din, Avor betoicha ir, pass through the city, betoicha Yerushalayim, pass through Jerusalem, behatvisa tuf, and you should inscribe the letter tuf, the Hebrew letter tuf, al mitzchais tu anashim, on the foreheads of the men, hane'enachim, who are groaning and who are sighing, al kol hato'evois hanasois besoicha. So Hashem says that I'm sending the Malach of Gavriel, the angel of Din, of strict justice. I'm sending him to destroy Yerushalayim. But before we do that, inscribe the letter Tuf. And the Gemara says in Shabbos there that the letter Tuf symbolizes Tichyeh, that you shall live. In other words, designate who the righteous were, the ones who are sighing and groaning over all the abominations and the sins that were being done in that generation, and inscribe a tuf, and the tuf will save them. I'll call it to Avos Hanasis Desuch. Omele HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeGavriel. So the Gemara explains the verse. Hashem says to Gavriel, the angel Gavriel, Lech go urshoim, and engrave, or imprint, al mitzchan shel tzadikim, tuf shel dio. Put in with ink, you should write the letter tuf, the Hebrew letter tuf, which stands for Tichya, that they shall live. Shelo yishlutu behem malachi chaval. That way, when I send the destructive angels to destroy Yerushalayim, the tzaddikim, the righteous, who were sighing and groaning, who were upset about all the evil that was being done, the angels will leave them alone. The al mitzcham shel rishoyim, and on the foreheads of the wicked, a tuf shel dam. You should inscribe a tuf of dam, of blood, which means the Gemara says tamus, that they should die, they should be singled out to die, in order that the angels of destruction should know who to go after. So on the righteous, they have the tuf out of ink, that they should live, and on the wicked, they have the tuf of blood, that they should die. So now look at this. The attribute of justice said before Hashem, why are the righteous different than the wicked? They all deserve to be punished. They all deserve to suffer the destruction of Yerushalayim. Amar Allah, Hashem says to the attribute of justice, what do you mean? What's the difference? Halalu tzadikim gemurim, halalu rishoyim gemurim. These are righteous and these are wicked. So Amar Lafanav, so the attribute of justice says before Hashem, the prosecutor says before Hashem, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Hashem, Haya biyadam limchais v'loy michu. They could have stopped what was going on and they didn't object, they didn't protest. They could have stopped it. So Amar Allah, Hashem tries one more defense on behalf of the righteous. Golav yidu alafanai she'im michu behem lo yikablu mihem. So Hashem says back to the attribute of justice, I myself know that it wouldn't have helped. Even if the righteous would have stood up and protested and they would have given classes and they would have tried to instruct. It wouldn't have helped, and therefore the tzaddikim cannot be held responsible. It wouldn't have helped. So Amra Lafanav Rabbeinu Shalom, so the Midas Hadin, the attribute of justice, says to Hashem, Im Lafanecha Galoi, even if you know that it wouldn't have helped, Lahem Mi Galoi, they didn't know that, the righteous didn't know that, as far as the righteous are concerned, they were lax. They fell down from their responsibility. They could have objected. They have no way of knowing that it wouldn't have helped. Maybe you can prophesize that it wouldn't have helped. But we don't. We down here on this world, we don't know the effects of our actions. So maybe if we would have protested, maybe if we would have taken the effort, the time and the effort to teach people, maybe it would have helped, right? So therefore, the righteous do need to be held responsible. And what happened? So because of that, Amr Lofanov, if you knew, but they didn't know, Bahainu Diksiv, and that's why the Pasuk says, Zakein Bachar Ubisula, that when Hashem destroyed Yerushalayim, everybody was implicated, the elders, the young, the Bisula, the maidens, the Taf, the children, the Nashim, the women, Tehargu L'mashchis, they should all be wiped out by the destruction of Yerushalayim. The Al Kol Ish Asher Olav Hatov Al Digashu. However, says Hashem to the Malach, to the destruction of angels, however, don't touch the people that have the Tuf, because that's what Hashem said originally. That was the original promise, that anybody who was righteous would be spared. But then a minute later, a second later, it says, Umi Mikdashai Techalu, you should start for my holy ones. Uksiv Ayichalu Ba'anoshim Asikenim Asheletei Abayis, that even the righteous who were standing before the temple were caught up in the destruction of Yerushalayim. So what do you see from this story? Says the Gemara, Hashem never takes back a promise. If Hashem promises that the righteous will be spared or the righteous will be rewarded, he never takes it back. But this is the one exception. The Midas Hadin was able to say to the righteous that you didn't care. You didn't object. You didn't stand up and try to correct what was going on around you. Hashem says, it wouldn't have helped. I know it wouldn't have helped. It was a lost cause. It wouldn't have helped. But the Midas Hadin persists that they didn't know that. Our responsibility is to try to make a difference. If we see something that could be fixed, we don't know that our effort. We can't say, who are we to say anything? What can we possibly accomplish? Because we don't know what we could accomplish. The righteous, they fell down. They didn't stand up to their responsibility. That's what the Gemara says. So we see from here, this is really what the Ramban said that we quoted earlier. That's how he actually reads the pasuk itself. You shall surely reprimand your friend, because if we don't reprimand, if we don't try to instruct and correct the wrongdoing, then we ourselves will be implicated, will be held responsible. So that's exactly what the Gemara is saying over here. And that's why the righteous were also caught up in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash of Yerushalayim. Now, Tosfos says, and all of this is actually going to be brought l'halacha, it's not just a powerful story in the Gemara, it's actually brought l'halacha. Tosfos says the following, Hainu hecha de safik imikabli. The only time you have to reprimand is when there's a chance it'll be accepted. It's a doubt. Maybe it'll help, maybe it won't. Kid the Omar B'samach, like the Gemara says, Lifnehem migoloi, that they didn't know. They didn't know that it wouldn't help. So as far as we're concerned, right, we thought maybe our toichacha, maybe our instruction would have helped. Aval hecha devadai loy mekabli, but let's say we know for sure, even if we know that it wouldn't help, so Tosfos says an interesting thing, and this is a Gemara in Maseches Beah. It's actually later on in Maseches Shabbos as well, but Tosfos brings the Gemara in Beah. Hanach lehem, leave it alone. Mutav shiu shoygigin v'ayu mezidin. It's better they should sin by mistake rather than sin deliberately, like it says in Amevi Kadayayin, like it says in the Gemara in Beah, and Daf Lamed all about. So Tosfos gives an interesting caveat here. Yes, the Gemara says that we're required, we have to feel the responsibility to stand up and try to correct the wrongdoing around us, as long as there's a chance it'll help. But if like the Gemara says, that the Midas Hadin says that they didn't know it wouldn't have helped. As far as they're concerned, it might have helped. But let's say we Taka know that it's not going to help. We're sure that if I say something is going to fall on deaf ears. Says Tosfos that if they don't realize they're doing something wrong, leave it alone. Why? Because it's better that they should sin by mistake than make a whole issue out of it, and now the person is going to continue sinning in a rebellious kind of a way. Imagine if you have a yid, right? He's a good yid. He tries to do the right thing. There are certain things that he's not doing right, but it's so ingrained that he's not going to correct himself. So Tosfos says a very important lesson, that there's no point to making an issue out of it. So far he's doing what he knows. If I try to correct that person, he's just gonna, it's a law, that issue is beyond his capability. He's not going to correct himself. So better that he shouldn't realize he's doing something wrong than to make an issue out of it, and it's going to become a federal case, and now he's going to continue doing something wrong, this time knowing that he's doing something wrong. Better left alone. So Tosfos gives us a rule that the only time we should try to instruct and try to teach and try to correct is if there's a chance it'll help. Like it says in the Gemara, that the reason the righteous were punished was because there was, from their perspective, there's a chance it could have helped. They didn't know that it wouldn't have helped. There was no indication that it wouldn't have helped. But if there really is an indication that it's not going to help, if the person who's doing something wrong doesn't realize, Tosfos says, better left alone. Better don't say anything, because what are you going to accomplish? You're just going to turn a mistake into a deliberate violation, and that just makes things worse. So we have to use seichel, we have to use common sense when we're faced with the challenge of shuvi rebuke. Now, Tosfos quotes the Gemara in Maseches Beah. The Gemara says the following, Amalei Rava Bar Chanan Le'abaye. Tanan, it says in a Mishnah, Ein Metapchin, you're not allowed to clap your hands on Shabbos because it's like you're making music. But Ein, that should be Misafkin. You're not allowed to slap your hand against your knee to make music. Ein Meraktin, you're not allowed to dance. So we dance on Simchas Torah. We go in a circle. That's not called dancing. Dancing is when you're jumping and taking your feet off the ground. That's really dancing. You're not supposed to engage in these activities on Shabbos because it's analogous to playing music, and there was a decree against playing music with instruments on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara itself says, so why is it that we allow people to do it nowadays if technically the Mishnah says you're not supposed to? Very often you see people clapping their hands. We don't say anything. Why not? We don't say anything. Why don't we teach people that you're not supposed to? So Abaye says back, I have a counter question. That you're asking me, I'll answer your question with another question. A person should not sit by the end. This would be the equivalent of the end of the an Eruv. Imagine if sometimes in a city, you know, the perimeters of the Eruv, sometimes they even have a sign that don't go past this point. The Eruv ends at this point. The Gemara says you're not supposed to sit with your objects, a sefer or a bucket, whatever you have. You shouldn't sit by the edge of the Eruv. Dilma mingder lechefetz, because maybe you'll drop your object and it'll roll past the Eruv. Be osila suye, and you'll come to carry. So here's the question. V'hohani noshi d'shaklen katzvayu v'azlan v'yasvin. But what about the women, that they sit in the courtyards and the mavoi, they sit right by the lechi, they sit right by the edge where the Eruv is, the equivalent of the Eruv, apuma din muva, they sit mamish by the edge of the mavoi, but they are midi, so they're in clear violation of this rabbinic halacha, not to sit by the edge of the Eruv, lest they drop something and carry, and we don't say anything. Ella, rather we apply the principle, and this was the principle that Tosfos said, Hanach lehem liYisrael, leave the Jewish people alone. Mutav yeshoygigin v'layum ezidin. It's better that these women who are sitting and they're enjoying, they're congregating by the edge of the Eruv, let them do it by mistake. V'layum ezidin. It's not going to help. They're just going to end up doing it on purpose. Don't make an issue. Don't make a federal case. Look the other way, because it's not going to help anyway. So that's the rule. Now the Gemara says, Hani mili bidrabanan. At first, the Gemara says this is only when a person is mistakenly violating a rabbinic mitzvah. He's like sit like this decree. Don't sit by the edge of the Eruv. There's nothing wrong in the meantime sitting by the edge of the Eruv. It's only a decree that lest I drop something and carry. So right now I'm only in violation of a rabbinic violation, but a deraisa lo. But if somebody is doing a biblical violation, then we should instruct no matter what. But the Gemara says lohi, that's not so. Loishno deraisa, it makes no difference if it's a biblical violation. Loishno b'drabanan, it makes no difference if it's a rabbinic violation. Loi amrina lehu v'loi midi, don't say anything if they're not going to listen. Why? Because Tosfos Yom Kippur deraisa, it's interesting, the issues they had back then. When it comes to Yom Kippur, of course you can't eat or drink on Yom Kippur, but you're even supposed to stop eating and drinking a few minutes before Yom Kippur, because you're supposed to add on to Yom Kippur. So we fulfill that because we go to Shul early, we say Tefillah Zakah. If you notice in the Tefillah Zakah, it says, I'm hereby accepting upon myself the afflictions of Yom Kippur. So we accept it upon ourselves a few minutes earlier. That's the mitzvah of Tosefes Yom Kippur, adding on to Yom Kippur. We have this halacha, by the way, regarding Shabbos. You're supposed to accept Shabbos upon yourself a few minutes before the last minute. You get the mitzvah of adding on to the Shabbos. And says the Gemara, Va'achli v'shasu ad shechashecha, and people are eating and drinking until the last minute, right? So they're not fulfilling the adding on extra to Yom Kippur. Of course, they're not violating Yom Kippur, but they're not getting the mitzvah of adding on to Yom Kippur. And we don't say anything. We look the other way. So why do we look the other way? Because here's the rule. The rule is that if your toichacha, if your instruction will help, or it might help. So then you have to stand up and you have to try to teach. You have to try to tell the people the halacha. If it's not going to help, if you know they're not going to listen because it's too much of a habit, or because sometimes people never heard it before and that's the way they grew up, so they're not going to believe you that it's wrong. So it's just going to make things worse. It's just going to create a federal case out of just an innocent mistake. Then the Gemara says, look away, whether it's the Rabbanan or whether it's Doiraisa. Now, the Rush brings an interesting nuance here from the Baal HaItter. Says the Rush, in the name of the Baal HaItter, this is going back to the 12 or 1300s, says the Rush, Dafka b'midi da'asi midrasha. The only time we apply the principle and we assume that they're violating unwittingly, they're violating by mistake, and it doesn't pay to say anything if they're not going to listen, going Tosefes Inui Yom Kippur. That's, for example, the example the Gemara gives, the mitzvah to add on to Yom Kippur. I will b'midi d'ksiv b'raisa b'hedyer. But let's say the Torah says something explicitly. You're not allowed to eat non-kosher meat. You can't get more explicit than that. You have to keep Shabbos. You can't do something wrong on Shabbos. So something explicit in the Torah, then you have to object, even if you think they're not going to listen. If something is explicit in the Torah, machinan bahu, we object, we protest, the anshinan lahu at the parshi, and the Rush brings in the name of the Baal HaItter a very strong lashon that we have to punish them, we have to enforce the law and make sure that they stop doing what's wrong. Obviously, this is only when we have the authority to do that. And the Darkei Moshe says, if something's explicit in the Torah, then we have to assume that they know they're doing something wrong. So we can't say, leave it alone, let them sin by mistake, it's better than sinning on purpose. Because if it's explicit, then we assume that they already know they're doing something wrong, and then it's our job to try to correct what's going on. So let's just summarize the details that we've just outlined now. If a person's in a position, if a person sees someone else making a mistake, and we're in a position to make a difference, and there's a good chance it'll make a difference, it's possible it'll make a difference, then we have to get up and we have to explain that what's going on is wrong. This is the proper way to do it, because hopefully they'll listen. If there's a chance they'll listen, then we're supposed to stand up, we're supposed to intervene. And that's what the Gemara says, that the reason that tzaddikim of that generation were held responsible and they were implicated and they were included in the Churban was because they could have made a difference. They didn't know that it wouldn't have helped. As far as they're concerned, they had an obligation to say something, it might have helped. That's if it might help. If we ourselves know for a fact that it's not going to help, so then it depends. So the person is doing something wrong unwittingly. The person is doing something wrong by mistake. So then says Tosfos and says the Rush that leave it alone because it's not going to help anyway. They're going to continue doing what they're doing. It's too ingrained. And right now they don't realize they're doing something wrong. So teaching them, letting them know, is just going to make things worse because you're going to turn a mistake into a deliberate violation. So if they're sinning deliberately, then we have to stand up. But if they're sinning by mistake, and if they're going to listen, it helps. That's the mitzvah to teach. We have to teach. But if they're sinning by mistake, and we can surmise that they're not going to listen anyway, then leave it alone. Let them continue making a mistake rather than turning it into a federal case and turning it into a deliberate violation. So when it's not going to help because they're not going to listen, and they're making a mistake in the meantime, then reprimanding will make things worse. However, the Bala Iter has a condition. That's only if it's not explicit in the Torah. If they're doing something wrong explicit in the Torah, somebody is violating something that's explicit, so then we have a mitzvah to instruct and to say something, even if we think that they're not going to listen initially, because we have to impose, we have to try to correct what's wrong. Now, I mentioned here in Zion, in item Zion, that Tosfos that we quoted in Shabbos seems to argue on the Baal HaItter, because Tosfos, in that whole story of the destruction of Yerushalayim, where we know they were doing explicit averis, things that were clear in the Torah, nevertheless, Tosfos says that the only reason why the righteous were implicated was because it could have helped. But if it would not have helped, if they themselves would have known that it would not have helped, Tosfos still applies the klal of Mutav Yeshoygin Vayu Mezidin, that leave it alone, let them continue to sin by mistake, rather than turning it into a deliberate sin. So you see from Tosfos, and I saw that others point this out as well, Tosfos holds that even if it's explicit in the Torah, we can still assume that they don't realize they're doing something wrong, and it doesn't pay to say anything if they're not going to listen. Okay, now all the halachas of when you're required to instruct, to reprimand, to rebuke, and when you're not, they're all brought in Hilchas Yom HaKippurim, in Simen Tav Resh Ches, regarding that halacha the Gemara mentioned about adding on to Yom Kippur. So the halacha summarizes the halacha like this. If there's a suffix, maybe they'll listen. This is item Ches. If there's a chance they'll listen, then you have to teach. If they're definitely not going to listen, so if it's a rabbinic violation, we don't say anything. Better they should sin by mistake. But if it's explicit in the verse, then we assume they realize they're doing it wrong, and you have to separate them. And furthermore, if we see that they know they're doing something wrong, then we have to separate them, even if it's only rabbinic. And that's exactly how it's brought in halacha. Okay. Now, the Bir Halacha, the Chavetz Chaim writes the Bir Halacha, he asks a kasha on the Bala Iter. So what did the Bala Iter say? The Bala Iter said that the only time we look the other way and leave it alone is if it's not explicit in the Torah. Says the Bir Halacha that, wait a minute, we can ask a kasha from the Gemara in Shabbos that we just learned. Because over there, clearly, in the times of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, people were violating things that were clear, outright violations. Nevertheless, the Gemara seems to say that if it would have been clear to the righteous that their rebuke would not have helped, then they would not have been included, they would not have been punished. The Bala Iter is saying that if it's clear, if it's explicit in the Torah, you have to rebuke them no matter what. In the story of the Gemara, even though the violations were clear violations, they were doing things wrong in the times of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash that were clearly in violation of what it says in the Torah, nevertheless, the Gemara says that the only reason the righteous had an obligation to rebuke was only because it might have helped. But if they would know for a fact that it would not have helped, the Gemara seems to say that the righteous would not have been held responsible. So how could the Bala Iter say that when something is explicit in the Torah, there's always an obligation to rebuke, even if it's not going to help. So the Chafetz Chaim answers that, and this is going to bring out a fundamental point, the Chafetz Chaim answers that you're right, there's a big distinction. This is an item test. There's a big distinction. If your rebuke might help, then like the Ramban says, and then like the Gemara says, we're actually held responsible for whatever is going wrong, because there's a chance we could have made a difference. But if we know for a fact that it's not going to make a difference, even though we're supposed to get up and protest, if we don't, we're not held responsible. We're only held responsible if we really could have made a difference. But if we know for a fact that it wouldn't have helped, then we just have a plain old mitzvah to rebuke, to stand up for what's right. But even if we don't do that, we're not held responsible. So when the Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, that whole story, that Hashem promised that the righteous would be spared, but Hashem took it back when the attribute of justice pointed out that the tzaddikim didn't try to help, and the attribute of justice said to Hashem that they could have made a difference. They didn't know that it wasn't going to help. As far as they're concerned, there was a chance that it could have helped, and therefore they should be held responsible. The only reason why they're held responsible, the only reason why we point out that there's a chance it would help, is in order to hold them responsible. But the Balei Iter is right. If there's no chance it would help, although they should still rebuke, they would not have been held responsible. So we see from here a tremendous idea that there are two components to the mitzvah of Toichacha. One component is to instruct in order to make a difference, in order to help, in order to teach. And if we fall down from our responsibility, we're held responsible for what could have been better. But then there's a second component. Even if we can't make it better, we still have a mitzvah to say something, not to give the impression that we condone what's going on. Even if we can't make a difference, we still have to say something no matter what. There's a positive mitzvah, a mitzvah saseh, to stand up for what's right, even if it's not going to make a difference. There are two elements to the mitzvah of Toichacha. The basic element is to try to instruct, to try to correct the wrongdoing. And if we don't do that, we're held responsible. Even if we can't possibly make a difference, we still have a mitzvah to stand up. Now, the Birkei Yosef, that's the Chidah, we've been quoting him often, the Chidah says that the only time when something's explicit in the Torah, even when it's explicit in the Torah, the only time we have to object is if there's a chance they'll accept. He argues on what we just said. But if there's no chance that they're going to accept, the only time we have to stand up is if a strong Lashon, Yodenu Takifa, if we have the authority to impose the law, like in the times when there was a Sanhedrin, that we can actually impose the law, Becheskes Yad, we have the power to forcibly impose the law. It's very interesting because we actually have a mitzvah to make sure people are keeping the halacha. It's not as if we have a choice, right? Nowadays, the only reason why nobody's around to enforce the halacha is only because we don't have the authority. We don't have a Sanhedrin. But in the times of Eretz Yisrael, of the Beis HaMikdash, the Sanhedrin would enforce the law. Like police would go around to make sure, like in the times of King Yoshio, police were going around to make sure nobody was doing Avodah Zarah. It's not free choice. Hashem gave the mitzvahs, and the police go around to make sure that we enforce the halacha. It's a very foreign concept to us. You know, we're so used to the idea of the separation of church and state. It's not a Jewish concept. The Jewish king and the Sanhedrin and the police force, they were there to enforce Hashem's rule. So says the Chidah, the only time that we have to object when it's explicit is when we can enforce the law. But if it's not going to make a difference and we're not in a position to enforce, says the Chidah, we're not obligated to say anything. So these are actually the two sides of the coin. There's a machlokes now between the Bir Halacha, who cites others, and the Chidah. The Chidah holds the only time we're obligated to protest when the person's not going to listen is only if we're in a position to enforce the law, to correct the problem. But if we're totally not in the position, like nowadays, there's nothing we can do to make other people keep the halacha. We're not obligated to say anything. But the Bir Halacha himself, citing others, says that there's still a mitzvah to say something, even if we can't make a difference, just in order to honor Hashem. That's the machlekes over here. Now, I summed it up in Yud Aleph in item 11. Behindu de ba'ofin de mezidin, that if people around us are doing things wrong deliberately, and we know that they're not going to listen, so the question is, what is the nature of rebuking? Is the nature of rebuking to correct the wrongdoing? So then the Pirkei Yosef, the Chidah, says that that's only if we can actually force. But if it's just a mitzvah of Teichacha Ba'alma to stand up for what's right, even if we know that it's not going to help, we still have a mitzvah to stand up for what's right. So it's a fundamental dispute here. What is the nature of the mitzvah of rebuke? Is it to teach and instruct, or is it to stand up for what's right? So I found that the Nemuke Yosef himself, one of the early Rishonim, he actually mentions both of these points. The Gemara says in Abal Yevimto, it's Gemara Yevamis. The Gemara says, Kishem shemitzvah leimer davar ha-nishma, just like it's a mitzvah to say something that people will listen to, kach mitzvah shalei omar davar she'enu nishma, it's also a mitzvah to not say anything if no one's going to listen anyway. It's Gemara Yevamis. So says the Nemuke Yosef, Zeloshoine, quote, L'mi she'enu mekabel, if the person's not going to listen, mitzvah v'choyme shaloi lo hechifai, then you're not supposed to say anything. Now, they ask a question, what about the Gemara in Erechin, that you have to be mechiach, you have to keep on reprimanding until the person turns around and he's ready to curse you or to hit you back. So says the Nemuke Yosef, that's referring to an individual. In other words, this is Mamish saying what the Birkei Yosef said, that we have an obligation to be mechiach if we can really make a difference, ad kedei kach, that we can force the person. But let's say there's a public violation where we can't possibly correct what's going on. So says the Nemuke Yosef, then there's a mitzvah to be quiet. Now, v'hadda amrinan in Shabbos, so the Nemuke Yosef himself asks from the Gemara in Shabbos that if you don't have to reprimand the public because they're not going to listen, so what about the story in Shabbos that they said to Rav Simon that you should reprimand the household of the Reish Galusa of the Exiliarch? And he said, they're not going to listen, but then Rav Zera said back, you should say something anyway. So here are the two points of the Nemuke Yosef. Hasam hu shlo yechichem klal, that's if you never said anything at all. El shayamakar behem shlo yishmu, you realize they're not going to listen. So here's what the Nemuke Yosef says. There are two reasons why you should rebuke anyway, even though you have your doubts if they're going to listen. Number one, ula yishmu, maybe they will listen. So that's the explanation of the Chidah, that it only pays to say something because it'll be helpful. That's what the Chidah said. That's what the Nemuke Yosef says. Ula yishmu, you never know, maybe it'll help. And then the second thing the Nemuke Yosef says, o mishum shel yilehem pischein peh, that they shouldn't have a defense to say, look, we've been doing this all our lives and nobody said anything. So they're going to feel that we condone the behavior. That's why you should say something. At least say something once. So the Nemuke Yosef here, one of the early commentaries, is hinting to these two components of rebuke. Says the Nemuke Yosef that if it's not going to help anyway, the Gemara in Yevamah says, don't say anything if it's not going to help anyway. Just like it's a mitzvah to say something that will be listened to, if it's not going to be listened to anyway, there's no mitzvah to say it. However, says the Nemuke Yosef, we should say it once. Why should we say it once? Because number one, maybe it'll help. That was the Chidah. And number two, even if it doesn't help, but at least they shouldn't feel that they have a defense. It can't go unsaid. It can't be that people say that, look, nobody ever said anything, so we felt that we were condoned to do what we were doing. But if it's an individual, says the Nemuke Yosef, you have to try as hard as you can to get him to help, because you can actually correct it. So that's basically the rule. The rule basically is that if you see something going on that's not proper, if you feel it'll help, you should say something. If it's not going to help anyway, so then the Birkei Yosef says we're not in a position to force, but the Bir Halacha brings that we should at least say something once just to show that we don't agree with what's going on. This is when what's being done is being done deliberately. We should at least say something. We have a few examples of how this applies. It's very interesting. Rav Moshe Feinstein, you know how like in on Rosh Hashanah, so the Gabbai, right before the blowing of the shofar, he gives a clap on the bima and he says, nobody should talk until all the tekiyas are completed at the very end of davening. So now inevitably you're going to have somebody in shul who's not going to listen, and he's going to talk to his neighbor even though it's before the completion of all the shofar blasts throughout the davening. So somebody once asked Rav Moshe, maybe we should stop making that announcement because it's going to make a person who does it by mistake, it's going to turn it into a deliberate, right? So it's just interesting how they were applying this question. Maybe we should never say anything because if we ever say something and somebody violates it, it'll be a deliberate violation. So Rav Moshe said in response, Ein kedai lahachriz on Rosh Hashanah. It's not worth announcing on Rosh Hashanah shaloi ledaber achar tekiyas demiyushiv, not to talk, not to interrupt after the first shofar blasts. Im ein mi betzibur shiishma, if no one's going to listen, right? Imagine you're in, it's a shul where it's just Grand Central Station. Nobody's going to listen. So then it's not worthwhile to say. The mutiv yeshoigin, let them sin by mistake rather than doing it on purpose. But if there's one person in the congregation who's going to listen, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, we can't withhold helping or teaching someone, somebody who wants to learn and somebody who wants to grow, just because everybody else is not going to listen. Because no one else is going to listen, the one person who is going to learn, who's interested in knowing the halacha, shouldn't be able to learn. He's entitled to know the halacha. But says Rav Moshe, if you can go over to that one person privately and teach the person the halacha, it will be better than announcing it publicly. That's a fascinating Rav Moshe. So nowadays, Baruch Hashem, people listen to the halacha. The vast majority of the shul does not talk during the shofar blasts. So it's worthwhile to remind everybody because it'll help. But imagine if you had a congregation where no one is going to listen. Rav Moshe actually said it doesn't pay to say it, right? But even in such a scenario, if there's one person who'll listen, that one person deserves to hear the halacha, to learn, and we're not required to worry about the people who don't want to learn. But if no one's going to learn from it, it doesn't pay to say anything. But Baruch Hashem, for us, it's worth it to say. Now, the Kshuvis and Hanhagis from Rav Moshe Sternbach, he says like this, what about in Eretz Yisrael, it's common, they make these demonstrations. Every time the government wants to open a street on Shabbos and allow cars to go through, so the from the Haredim, they make a demonstration. So someone once asked Rabbi Yashiv, actually, that what's the point of these demonstrations? If anything, it makes things worse. It just emboldens the people more, and they want to just make a mochama. So says Rabbi Moshe Sternbach that the purpose of these demonstrations sometimes is not to actually teach anybody else. The gather is that we're doing it for ourselves, to show ourselves and to show our children how much we value the keeping of the Shabbos, right? So this is really what the Bir Halacha was saying. Even if our standing up and protesting is not going to help, but it helps for ourselves, it helps, they shouldn't have a piskoin pe, it helps to be mechazik, to reinforce our values. So that's what Rav Moshe Sternbach said, and that's what Rav Yashiv said. The Ksav Sofer, yes.
So what happened? I remember this situation that happened in the 80s in Eretz Yisrael that caused a lot of policemen who are not working on Shabbos to work on Shabbos.
That's a good question. So that's sort of what they're asking. So he was saying that were the policemen religious? Were they keeping Shabbos anyway? They were otherwise. So that's really what reminded that was the shikl. That was really what the question was, and the answer was that the minig there was that we're making these demonstrations. Otherwise, Rebel Yashin actually said something else in addition to that. He said because otherwise the whole country is just going to end up not having any Shabbos observance at all. So it's almost like the short term and the long term. And also the second thing he said was, we have to teach our children how much we value Shabbos. That's what that was the response. Even though it's going to cause more chil Shabbos in the short term, it's a fascinating shikulat. You have to have the plates, you have to have the shoulders to be able to make that kind of a decision. You're right. Now the Ksav Sofer says something interesting. He says that a rav, somebody who's hired to be the rav to instruct and to teach, the expression is he's yoshev al kisei rabbanus. He sits on the throne of the rabbinate. So he was hired. That's his responsibility to teach. So he says, even if the congregation gets angry at him for being a pest and for teaching, but that's his responsibility as long as the covet of Hashem is before his eyes. And it's a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says that if you have a rabbi, that it's almost like a joke. If you have a rabbi that the congregation loves, that means that the rabbi is not rebuking the congregation enough. That's what the Gemara says. It's a fascinating. So it's if you have a rabbi who the congregation says, you know, he's very strict, then you know the rabbi is doing his job. Now, just to conclude, the Gemara in Erchin says, Omer of Tarfin, it should be Rav Tarfin. Timhani ani yemesh bedor hazesh mekabel toichacha. Rav Tarfin already said in the times of the Gemara that nowadays people don't accept rebuke. People get defensive. They don't accept rebuke. For example, if you say, the Gemara gives an example, a mashal. If you say to somebody that you have a splinter between your teeth, something neutral, so he's going to turn around and say to you, well, you have a beam between your eyes, right? So we're not malumit, we're not habituated to accept instruction properly. We get defensive. The Gemara also says that Omar of Elazar ben Azariah, he says, I'd be amazed if somebody in our generation, he's talking about in the Gemara's time, that knows how to rebuke. Because we don't know how to rebuke properly. So on the one hand, people don't accept rebuke. But on the other hand, we don't know how to give rebuke either. Rebuke has to come from the heart. It has to come from a safe place that the person feels that you're out for his benefit. And then the Gemara concludes with a beautiful idea. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri testified. He says, I can bring the heavens and the earth as my witness. You know how crazy I drove Rabbi Akiva? I used to rebuke him all the time. I used to complain about him in front of the Rebbe, Reb Shimon Berebbe. And not only did Rabbi Akiva accept the rebuke, we became the best of friends. Like the Pasuk says, Al Tichach Letz Pen Yisna'echa, that if you have someone who's a scoffer, it doesn't pay to say anything, but Hocheach L'chacham V'yaveka, but if you give teichach, if you give rebuke to a wise man, he's going to love you for it. So basically the bottom line is that we should say something if it'll be meaningful, if it'll help. If it's not going to help anyway, if the person is making a mistake, it's better to be left unsaid. If the person is deliberately sinning, we should show our the fact that we don't condone what's being done, but one time is enough. And we, as Yidden, who are looking to grow, we should try to orient ourselves that we want to accept rebuke, like it says about Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that he became the best of friends with Rabbi Akiva because he always used to rebuke Rabbi Akiva all the time, and Rabbi Akiva knew how to take the rebuke, and they just became closer and closer because he saw that you had my best interest in mind, and that's why you're giving me so much rebuke. So it's basically a mixed bag, and it's something that we have to use our judgment on before we ever try to correct someone else. We have to make sure that we've mastered the art of rebuke. All right, Yasha Koya.
It's interesting that no one mentions the double lashon of hocheach to hochiach.